KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, gale warning through tonight. Today, northwest winds 35 knots, seas 6 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, northwest winds 35 knots, seas 7 feet with freezing spray. And Thursday, northwest winds 30 knots, seas 6 feet with freezing spray. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, today, northwest winds 25 knots, seas 3 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 2 feet. And Thursday, variable winds 10 knots, becoming southwest 20 in the afternoon, seas at 1 foot. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, small craft advisory Thursday. Today, north winds 15 knots, seas 2 feet. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, becoming south 15 after midnight, seas 3 feet. And Thursday, southwest winds 25 knots, seas 7 feet. Port Hedland and Nelson Lagoon, small craft advisory today. Today, northwest winds 25 knots, seas 7 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, north winds 15 knots, seas 5 feet. And Thursday, southeast winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, small craft advisory Thursday. Today, north winds 15 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, southeast winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. And Thursday, south winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, partly sunny with scattered snow showers. Highs 15 to 25, north winds 15 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows 10 to 20 above, variable winds 10 miles an hour. And Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of snow. Highs in the upper 20s to upper 30s, south winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 2:59 a.m. at 6 feet 5 inches, a low at 7:53 a.m. at 3 feet 7 inches, a high at 1:44 p.m. at 8 feet 6 inches, and a low at 8:50 this evening, a minus tide of 1 foot 3 inches. Your sun rose at 9:38 this morning, and your sun will set at 6:12, giving us 8 hours and 35 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, St. Paul is adapting to uncertainty about its future as a crab processing hub, and the Alaska Board of Fisheries is meeting to discuss statewide regulations. Stay tuned.
ALIU is proud to sponsor the stories and voices that connect our community. ALIU is committed to building a stronger future for our region. To learn more about ALIU's commitment for a stronger future, visit alucorp.com.
Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in. It's Wednesday, January 29th, 2025. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. This season, the Bering Sea snow crab fishery reopened after a long closure. But the country's largest crab processing facility, located in the Pribilof Islands, isn't taking any crab. The Alaska Desk and KUHB's Theo Greenlee reports on how the community is adapting to an uncertain future.
On January 15th, crabbers in the Bering Sea delivered snow crab to processors for the first time in 2 years. But not to St. Paul. Trident Seafood says the quotas are too small to justify opening its St. Paul plant, which it calls the largest crab processing plant in the world. It's also the only commercial seafood company on the island, so the decision not to reopen comes as a major blow for the town of around 400 people.
things have been tough, but we're weathering the storm.
John Wayne Melavidoff is the president of St. Paul's tribal government, the Aleut community of St. Paul Island. They've struggled since the snow crab fishery first closed in 2022 due to a massive stock decline. The community reached a deal with Unalaska, who agreed to process St. Paul's crab without taking their landing tax. But St. Paul is still bracing for an uncertain future.
We're trying to keep the hope up that fisheries will come back, but also plan for just in case they don't.
Melavidoff says that bracing for the possibility of no more fishing in the future means diversifying the economy. The Pribilof Islands are among the richest marine ecosystems on the planet. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration even has a permanent lab there. Melavidoff thinks they can attract more researchers to build facilities in St. Paul. The tribe opened the Bering Sea Research Center this past summer and is currently hosting scientists from the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
I keep saying we're working on pivoting to a research economy, but I feel like we're doing it now. We're not working on it, we're doing it.
Historically, the Pribs have remained somewhat separate from the Aleutians, a couple hundred miles south. But Melavidoff stresses how important regional collaboration is. In October, he attended the Aleut Environmental Justice Working Group, a meeting between Aleutian tribes in Anchorage hosted by the Department of Energy. He says the discussion was a breath of fresh air.
We all have a lot of the same problems. We all come up with our own solutions. It would be nice to talk and just share those solutions with each other, make life a little easier for each other, right?
Among those solutions could be an increased military presence. Some regional leaders have turned to the military as a way to diversify local economies, especially as the Pentagon shows an increased interest in Alaska. The largest city in the region, Unalaska, has promoted itself as an Arctic port, encouraging the federal government to establish a larger naval presence there. Last year, St. Paul hosted a visit from the U.S. Coast Guard, which had a permanent presence on the island until 2010.
We did a potluck with them. And Admiral Fagan and Senator Sullivan said that the halibut chowder they had here was some of the best chowder they've had in the world, and they consider themselves chowder snobs.
But the region's military history is fraught. The United States government forcibly evacuated Unanga from the Pribilofs and Aleutians during World War II and forced them to live in abandoned seafood canneries, where many died. Melavidoff recognizes the risk of rekindling that trauma. Whatever path St. Paul takes, Melavidoff says working with other communities in the region will be key. And he thinks regional events like St. Paul's growing culture camp can bring communities together too. Unalaska's summer fair has grown in recent years, and Melavidoff thinks it would make an ideal gathering for towns all around the region.
We could gather again as a region and celebrate being Unungan, celebrate our culture, our language. And I really feel like we need that as a people. We need that gathering to feel complete again.
Melavidoff says these connections are vital, not just for cultural preservation, but for building a stronger future for the region. In St. Paul, I'm Theo Greenlee.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries kicked off their highly anticipated regulatory meeting in Ketchikan yesterday. The Board of Fisheries deliberates on all state fishery regulations. Their decisions dictate how the Alaska Department of Fish and Game manages all fishing in Alaska waters. The board is composed of 7 members from across the state who are appointed by the governor. The board meets every 3 years to review policies and regulations that affect fishermen in southeast Alaska. At their sprawling meeting in Ketchikan over the next 2 weeks, they will deliberate on nearly 160 different proposals. The proposals cover some big questions about the region's fisheries, like when, where, and how many different gear types and users may fish. The proposals are organized by shellfish and groundfish, like rockfish, crabs, shrimp, and geoducks, and then finfish fisheries like salmon and herring. A couple of proposals on the agenda even seek to establish an entirely new fishery in southeast Alaska for a type of squid. This week marks the beginning of the 6-day groundfish and shellfish session. Following opening remarks from the Board of Fisheries chair, The meeting launched into a series of presentations from area management biologists and state fisheries officials about subsistence, data, and management methods for the region's Dungeness, Red King, and Tanner crabs, shrimp, geoduck, sablefish, rockfish, and ling cod. Per the agenda, all of today will be dedicated to public testimony, and the board will deliberate at the end of the session, meaning they will likely put proposals to a vote over the weekend. The Alaska Board of Fisheries is chaired by Merritt Carlson Van Dort. She's based out of Anchorage and is the CEO of Far West Incorporated, the Alaska Native Village Corporation for Chignik Bay. As the board members introduced themselves yesterday morning, it became apparent that this was the first time many of them would be deliberating on Southeast Alaska fisheries. The last Board of Fisheries meeting on the Southeast region was in 2022. Governor Mike Dunleavy appointed five of the seven current board members after that meeting. Those five new board members hail from Talkeetna, Cordova, Tenena, and Anchorage, and a couple of them noted at the beginning of the meeting that it was their first time in the area. Another difference for this year's meeting is the schedule includes periods of time in which the public can share Indigenous traditional knowledge. The meeting runs through February 9th at the Ted Ferry Civic Center in Ketchikan. Protections for 28 million acres of wilderness lands across the state have once again been called into question by the sweeping executive order for the state of Alaska released by the White House last week. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, tribal stakeholders of the lands remain opposed to the move and are preparing for the next fight.
In August 2024, tribal and conservation groups in Alaska celebrated the U.S. Interior Department's move to finalize federal protections for 28 million acres of wilderness lands across the state. Now, the Trump administration has directed the agency through executive order to remove those protections as part of an effort to maximize resource development in Alaska. More than half of Alaska's 229 federally recognized tribes have come out in strong opposition to opening the lands known as D1 lands to potential development. They say it could further threaten food security at a time when subsistence resources are already in peril, including near-total salmon fishing closures on the Yukon River. Eugene Paul, former first chief of the Lower Yukon River community of Holy Cross, chairs the Bering Sea Interior Tribal Commission, a group representing 38 of the tribes in opposition. He says he hopes that dialogue will be possible with the new Secretary of Interior, Doug Burgum of North Dakota.
I know we're going to be uphill battle again, but we're ready. I mean, I think we're going to be prepared to, you know, educate who's going to be in his cabinet. Maybe we could sit down with him.
The 28 million acres in question are scattered across Alaska, but the majority lie in the vast western reaches of the state, where they overlap with the range of the declining western Arctic caribou herd and trace large portions of the Yukon and Kuskokwim river systems. The question of D1 land status goes back more than five decades, when they were set aside in the public interest by the Interior Department following passage of the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Numerous initiatives, some successful, have been made to show that opening the lands to potential development through what are known as public land orders is in the public interest rather than leaving them closed. The recent White House directive turns back the clock to what was attempted in 2021 during the final days of the first Trump administration under then Interior Secretary David Bernhardt. The Biden administration quickly reversed Bernhardt's public land orders, citing legal defects and a lack of consultation with tribes, and initiating a years-long review of the potential impacts of removing protections. Charisse Arce, a senior attorney with the nonprofit environmental law firm Earth Justice, says it isn't clear what strategy the Trump administration may use given the extensive documentation backing the current D1 protections.
They're going to have to address these facts, which I think will be difficult because, you know, there was 19 different public meetings and a pretty robust public process and extensive evidence gathering. As the executive order is written, it's just simply to reinstate them in their original form, but they'll still suffer from the same legal defects.
Alaska Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan have previously co-sponsored legislation aimed at opening up the D1 lands, and Murkowski has called the BLM's analysis that led to the protections currently in place unilateral and unnecessary. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy has also been a strong proponent of opening D1 lands. In a press conference last week praising Trump's executive order, Dunleavy didn't specifically address the D1 lands, but spoke generally about the benefits of resource development for rural Alaskans.
In the rural parts of the state of Alaska, where some of our most economically disadvantaged fellow Alaskans live, They want opportunity. They want the ability for their kids to stay close to home.
But for Paul of Holy Cross, the concept of jobs holds a different meaning in communities where he says roughly 75% of food comes from subsistence. He's also skeptical that opening up D1 lands to potential development would lead to local job creation.
We don't have the economy of, you know, having jobs and stuff. I mean, if they say that they're going to have more jobs if they open up lands, I don't see it happening because it never did work in the past. People fly in, they fly their own people in, and they get their job done and they fly out, and that's it.
With the sprawling list of actions in Trump's Alaska-specific executive order, Interior Secretary Burgum has much more than just the issue of D1 lands on his plate. It remains to be seen whether tribal or conservation groups will ultimately decide to mount a legal challenge. The Department of Interior did not immediately respond to a request for comment. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Tune in Fridays at noon and 5 right here at KUCB for new episodes of the Bering Sea Barometer. Join your host, Captain Pete Nathan, for journal-style entries from all up and down the Aleutian chain, chronicling the real-life experiences of fishing the Bering Sea. Find all episodes of the podcast on our website and on Spotify. Here's a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. KUCB's board meeting takes place tonight, starting at 5:30. Agenda items include the community support funding application, strategic plan, and mid-year budget. Anyone is welcome to join the board here in the Burma Road Chapel. Culture Night is at the Kamalungan Tribal Office tonight, also starting at 5:30. This week, head over to put together your 2025 vision board. Don't miss this opportunity to strengthen your ties with family and community while walking a path rooted in shared values, healing, and tradition. Cookbook Club is tomorrow night, starting at 5:30 in the library. This month's selection is Arabia, Recipes from the Life of an Arab in Diaspora by Reem Asil. Everyone is welcome, and copies of the book are available for checkout. Finally, Unungam Tanu class is in the high school, room 180, tomorrow evening from 6 to 7:30. To learn more about these events and everything else coming up, check out your community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Take care.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a housekeeper and a bartender. The Palouf Harbor Tribe is looking for an administrative assistant. The City of Sandpoint is looking for a financial director. The Adaga Tribe of King Cove is looking for a tribal administrator, a part-time or full-time IGAP assistant, and a solid waste recycling technician. The Belkowski Tribe of King Cove is looking for a part-time IGAP assistant, a full-time Belkowski Environmental Program assistant, and a part-time pull-tab sales clerk. Aleutian Housing Authority is hiring a lead carpenter in King Cove. EATS is hiring a behavior health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They are also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. APIA is in need of a family advocate for Sandpoint, King Cove, and Falls Pass, and a cultural preservation specialist for Accutan. And today is January 29th, 2025. Happy birthday to Ashton Gunderson, and happy birthday to Sunny Persincula. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us or email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
KSDP is generously supported by Precision Airways in Sandpoint, Alaska, offering chartered air services throughout the Aleutians East Borough and beyond. For more information on charters and prices, Theo is available at 907-989-4080. Precision Airways is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
much inside of you. She's some kind of demon that's hidden love too. If you don't watch out, it'll stick to you, to you. What kind of fool are you? Strange brew, can what's inside of you?
Please send me the victim on the street. I'm coming home. got no time for fooling with you, baby. Your stupid game is about to end. You played it out, thought you had it made. And it looks like someone passed you by.
Baby, make your heart come alive. Rock and roll, but these blues wouldn't leave me alone. I didn't know what they meant till I rambled far from home. We'll be right back.
Would you lie to sail the sea like a pirate, wild and free? Cast your whole life upon the wind. Well, it's your song.
The most music for Sandpoint is on 8:30 a.m. KSDP.
I Should have known, no one can do me like you do, like you do.